Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you. Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number, 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161. Thank you.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, all across America. This is Darren Weeks here on another edition of American Exposé. Starting off with a little bit of a country sound tonight. It's July 19th, 2004, and a lot of things going on. A lot of bad things going on in the world, but this is the broadcast that hopefully we're going to counter some of the bad things and present some solutions. Roger Mundy, I've asked him to be a guest on the broadcast tonight. He has spent many years working with state legislators in his state of Kansas, and he's been with the Kansas 10th Amendment Society. He should be joining us momentarily here on the broadcast, but first I'll cover some information that has come my way, and this is very dire information. This is dated July 19th, so it's current. It says that the House Appropriations Committee... This is about the mental illness screening that purportedly President Bush plans to unveil. It says, this is an action alert. The House Appropriations Committee funds President's new Freedom Commission initiative that includes plan to screen all U.S. citizens for mental illness. Folks, this is very important. It says, tell Congress and the White House no mental screenings for Americans and no funding for this plan. Yesterday, the House Appropriations Committee approved $20 million in new federal funds to begin implementation of the plans set forth by the new Freedom Commission on Mental Health, the NFC, to get every man, woman, and child in America screened for mental illness. Amidst broad public concern that many of the antidepressants being prescribed to Americans are under federal investigation for causing suicidal reactions, the new Freedom on Mental Health Commission's campaign for national mental health screening will result in millions more Americans being diagnosed with fraudulent and unscientific mental disorders and prescribed dangerous and deadly psychiatric drugs. Now, $20 million has now been approved by the House Appropriations Committee for state incentive transformation grants. State incentive transformation grants, ladies and gentlemen. In other words, they're going to offer the states money to get this implemented through the legislature. This is why this program is very important, and this is why it's important to have Roger Mundy on tonight, because we'll talk about this here in just a moment. This is something that they're going to be getting implemented on a state level, and if they're trying to get it pushed through a state level because they have to, then it can be stopped at a state level. Very important stuff, folks. Anybody, for purposes of screening, can be referred to as mentally ill. $20 million has been approved, as I just said, by the House Appropriations Committee for State Incentive Transformation Grants in order to begin nationwide implementation of the new Freedom Commission on Mental Health Plan. Okay. It's the beginning of a brave new world. Should the Senate fund this? The commission based its entire findings on the definition of mental illness as defined by psychiatry's billing bible, the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. The methods of mental health screening recommended by the New Freedom Commission are lists of arbitrary questions based on this DSM. If this sweeping mental health initiative is implemented, millions more Americans will certainly be diagnosed and drugged given the subjective diagnosis. The New Freedom Commission on Mental Health's report states that mental illnesses are shockingly common, but neglects to address or even mention the fact that there is no medical or scientific means by which to diagnose a mental illness. Psychiatrists and mental health proponents promote psychiatric disorders as a disease or an illness that can be diagnosed in the same manner as real physical illness. This is a fraud. There are no blood tests, brain scans, or chemical imbalance tests to validate any mental disorder as an illness or disease. With no scientific or medical criteria to substantiate these claims, anyone could be diagnosed as mentally ill based solely on a checklist of behaviors. The DSM contains hundreds of psychiatric mental disorders, which are a list of behavioral symptoms that are literally voted into existence and inserted into the DSM. In other words, the whole thing is a fraud. Such diagnoses include caffeine-related disorder, mathematics disorder, disorder of written expression, and the all-encompassing phase of life problem. These disorders are simply a classification of symptoms that are drastically different from and foreign to anything in medicine. The New Freedom Commission, is blatantly promoting the coercive and manipulative tactics that have led to millions of children being falsely labeled with mental disorders in our public schools. Schools have become mental health clinics where children are diagnosed based on subjective questionnaires instead of given proven educational solutions. This fact was substantiated by a report from the President's Commission on Excellence in Special Education, which found that 2.4 million children had been diagnosed with mental disorders and placed in special education, when in fact these children had simply not been taught to read. This goes on for a few more paragraphs, but the point here is that they're trying to implement this this mental health screening for everyone in the population, and this is something that they're getting done, or they hope to get done on a statewide level, folks. They want to offer the states money to implement this, and that's pretty much the way they get many of their things implemented, is by the carrot and stick approach to the state. And one man who has been working to educate people about the plight, the situation on how we can make a difference at stopping some of this stuff that comes down from the federal government, these so-called federal mandates, is our guest tonight, Roger Mundy. He's formerly with the Kansas 10th Amendment Society, I guess, and he's been working to educate people in his area. Roger, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Darren. Good to be here.
Darren, if you're listening, I could hardly hear Roger. If you could give me a little more volume there. And, Roger, if you could speak as loud
okay.
as possible. I heard you many times on the broadcast of Sweet Liberty with Jackie Petru, and you've always been a voice of reason. Anytime there's a turmoil or anything, I can count on you to kind of, give us a little peace, I guess, for lack of a better word. You've been working there in Kansas for how many years?
Oh, probably a decade.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that.
And you've been able to get a lot of things. How did you get involved in all of this?
Well, actually, what happened was my sister read about a group called the Committee of 50 States, and I went to a meeting with her, and I think what shocked me into action was Waco, because I knew I was frantic. People I was working with, I said, I know they're killing the children now. We got to go down there. And I didn't know enough, didn't have the courage, didn't go. But it disturbed my conscience to the point where I knew we had to do something, because the state, in this state of Denmark, it's something stank. So she found this little group and went to it. Turned out it was a Joseph Stumps thing, who was sponsoring the ultimatum resolution. And we attended a meeting, and at that meeting, we examined it and decided that wasn't the way to go. Then someone brought forward Senator Charles Duke's 10th Amendment resolution from the state of Colorado.
Mm-hmm. I have that right in front of me, as a matter of fact.
Okay, yeah, and that we voted to organize and to do, to pursue that in the state, and we didn't know anything. Some knew a lot more than I did, of course, but most of us didn't know anything, including me, and we decided to call ourselves the Kansas 10th Amendment Society at that time. And the question was raised, but what about the teeth? Now, if we pass this get the state to pass this resolution, it's just a resolution. How do we get the state to enforce it? Now, we didn't know what to do, so we tabled that at that time. And then down the road many years, we did get the Kansas 10th Amendment, Society did get the 10th Amendment resolution passed in Kansas, and then here comes the Conference of the States, which was an attempt by the big think tanks to institute a standing constitutional convention in place of the in place of constitutional government in America. Mm-hmm. And we went from the proactive position to get the 10th Amendment resolution passed and considering how to give the state powers to enforce it to the defensive position of stopping this constitutional convention on fast track. And we managed to get that killed also. So we learned an awful lot, and learned one very big thing that almost everybody in the state government didn't know what they were doing. That most of them had good intentions, and that we had institutions that were corrupt because over many years through gradualism, the institutions of state government, local government, national government have been corroded, replaced, supplanted, usurped, and influence of political parties and moneyed interests have all but destroyed the republic and the memory of the republic and the various state republics in America's minds. So a lot of what we did during that time was study and seek solutions. And I remember nearly despairing one time because, you know, when you're in a small group fighting against all kinds of tyrannies that most of your fellow citizens don't know about, and you're all the time on the edge of bankruptcy, all the time your time is eaten up, and you're fighting, flailing this tide with your swords, you know. And
mm-hmm.
But, you know, by the grace of God, we had some very, very major victories for a small group, and learned one principle that a small group of activists, especially those who have dedicated themselves and asked for God's grace in their fight, can literally change the positions of an entire state government, can kill bad measures, can push through good measures. One reason is because when you go up to the most all-state capitals in America, there's no citizens up there. They're just lobbyists. You walk in as a citizens group, it's a breath of fresh air to the legislators.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many times up there I told them that I'm not here to ask you for anything. I don't want anything from you. I am here to give you something. I am here to give you back your power. And I say, you know, it's not because I think you're so wise, because I don't. It is because the hope of the American people lies in decentralizing the power in this country out of unaccountable hands on the dark side of the moon, someplace called Washington, D.C., and to restore it back into people that we can actually, through our great pains and sorrows, drive up to the state capitol and chew you out, or tell you good job, or tell you don't do that, do this, or research for things for you, or at least let you know what the people want. And I remember there was a bill that was a part, it was part and parcel of the Conference of States, and it was brought back in by some of the best representatives in our state up there because it was deceitful. And I went up before that committee, and it was my own representative. I went up to her office, and I said, I can't believe you introduced this thing. And I told her the evils involved, and she changed her mind right there in the office. Then I went to the committee here, and I was hearing it, and I said, I want to acknowledge the fact that the finest legislators in this state have introduced this bill for the highest motive, because it looks like it'll restore state sovereignty. But in fact, it does the opposite. And I said, I don't see how you could know what it would do, considering you are looking at some 3,000 bills a year. And I have studied this bill for 3 years. And then I educated them on what it would do. And they killed it right there in committee. And legislators were coming up to me and saying, so you said that the intention of those who promoted this were the highest. Oh, yes, 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 because they want what should be here, and that is constitutional state government, the proper power in the state to counteract centralized tyranny. And he turned to the legislator next to him and said, see, I told you I wasn't a bad guy. And this is what people can do in small groups.
It just takes a few people wanting to make a difference, doesn't it?
It does. It's a lot of work, but there's some things that you can learn from efforts that people have been there before. And there's an awful lot of people in the 10th Amendment Society who got burnt out and had to and went away, moved away, the career change, or you know, and it kind of fell apart because of weariness, I believe. And because we saw positive victories, but we saw an awful lot of felt futile lots of times. And you know, as I saw the group dwindle over some time, I went into prayer, and I said, Father, you know, why we're doing this, and we tabled the enforcement of the 10th Amendment till later, and then we were put on defensive. And I am asking in the holy name of your Son, Christ Jesus, what is the enforcement of the 10th Amendment? What can we do? And he directed my gaze in the Citizens Rule Book copy of the Constitution, the Article 5 of the Constitution, that talked about the amending process. And I don't know how to describe it. It's like an epiphany. It leapt out of the page. I'd read it a million times, but it leapt out of the page this time, and it said something to me. It said that basically what that article says is that amendments are valid for all intents and purposes except for three conditions. And two of them had expired. They had a date on them, like 1851 or something. And the last condition, the very last clause, said the exception that no amendment would be valid. It could be valid if because no state could be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate without its consent. That's the one condition left in the Constitution that no amendment can change. And the significance that came home to me, what that was, what that is the power of the state government to control, literally control, every vote, every measure introduced, everything their representatives in Congress can do, the U.S. senators from that state. And I said, this must mean that the states used to control what their senators did. And I began to research. I remember weeping the significance. I can't even explain how I understood the significance. I was weeping because here was the key to the Union of the States, the Republic, and the various 50 nation states now, the key was the state's power to control one half of Congress, the state governments, and that was the federal system. And this has been acknowledged. I went researching and I found it was in fact the case that, for example, when people who were elected or senators would go up to Congress, they couldn't take their seats without presenting their credentials, and their credentials consisted of their instructions from their constituents. In the Senate, it was from the state government, state legislature. And in the House, it was from the people.
They weren't even allowed to be seated.
They weren't allowed to be seated. They had to have in hand instructions, legally bona fide, you know, it'd be notarized and such, legally attested to, these are the instructions for this man. He may take his seat in our name. He has this, his credentials. And that's what the credentials constitutionally are of all elected representatives. And I went on studying and studying and found that originally, long ago in the Dutch Republic in 1400s, later on in England, I guess it was in the 17th century, and then in America, the name got changed to representation in England sometime, but it started out as representer.
Representers.
Right, and the thing was the people would come together in their assembly, deliberate what they wanted their will to be in the General Assembly, elect somebody, instruct that person, and present to that person those instructions, and that man became the representer. He was to go to the General Assembly and re-present what he had been presented with.
So we have really gotten a long ways away from that concept of representing, haven't we?
Oh, very much so. But you know what's significant about it is that so many things. When you read some of the great political philosophers, like one of them is John Stuart Mill, and he's talking about on liberty and other essays. This is Oxford's World Classic. There's a chapter headed "Ought pledges to be required from members of Parliament? Should a member of the legislature be bound by the instructions of his constituents?" And he dedicates an entire chapter to it. And he says, "For let the system of representation be what it may, it will be converted into one of mere delegation if the electors so choose. And as long as they are free not to vote and free to vote as they like, they cannot be prevented from making their vote depend on any condition they think fit to annex to it." And he goes on to say that once the people believe in their power to instruct their representatives, that every government will have to bow before it, because they will do it. And it is an irresistible power, and is the foundational power of all of our political rights. So David Hume was a philosopher in the Scottish Enlightenment, and there was a great debate over there in the 17th century. The Commonwealthmen, and they were also called the countrymen, were insisting that the people had the power to instruct their representers. And he put forward this horrible critique in that, let me find it here, "I must therefore be of opinion that an alteration in this particular would introduce a total alteration in our government, and would soon reduce it to a pure republic." And he goes on to say that the monarchy would be banished. and the people would rule. And that is the essence of Republican government.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these crimes coming down upon us in disguise. For example, like I picked up on the last part of this, what you were talking about.
The screening of mental illness, the whole population.
Right.
Every man, woman, and child.
There's a couple things that people could refer to if they like to. There's some very powerful works that show the evil in this concept. One is by C.S. Lewis, 1940, in a book called God in the Dock. And he talks about, but because they are treatment, not punishment, they can be criticized only by fellow experts and on technical grounds, never by men on grounds of justice. He says that, thus, when the command is given, every prominent Christian in the land may vanish overnight into institutions for the treatment of the ideologically unsound. And it will rest with the expert gaolers, or jailers, to say when, if ever, they are to re-emerge. But it will not be persecution. Even if the treatment is painful, even if it is lifelong, even if it is fatal, that will be only a regrettable accident. The intention was purely therapeutic. And so on. So he talks about within the... that ideology, there's no right or wrong, or freedom and slavery. It's simply treatment. And so, if a person were to get with his fellows and organize and go up to the state to educate them, if you bring along some powerful statements like this from C.S. Lewis, or a whole host of works by Thomas Zaz, he's a remarkable man. He's a professor of psychiatry at the State University of New York. And he wrote several books. One's called The Myth of Mental Illness, Law, Liberty, and Psychiatry.
Well, that's applicable, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Well, pardon me?
I said that certainly applies.
Yeah, here's one. It's called Psychiatric Slavery, When Confinement and Coercion Masquerade as Cure. So it starts out, in the United States, more people are confined in psychiatric hospitals than in prisons. How is this imprisonment of persons innocent of lawbreaking justified? Why do courts and lawyers, civil libertarians, and psychiatrists support involuntary mental hospitalization? So there is he's got 20 books out that show this in America and give sound argument against it, and is also the guy's PhD in psychiatry. So you're not just a carpenter up there when you go to your state legislature.
Talk a little bit, Roger, to the people out there right now. I'm thinking of people who say, well, gee, this is all nice and everything, but, you know, I don't... Who am I to talk to my state representative my state legislator? I mean, I'm just a Joe Schmo, and you're saying bring some resources with you. But many of these legislators, I've heard many times it repeated that if they get like five or six calls, they feel like they've been besieged with people because they get so little response.
Right.
When we come back from the break, I'd like you to talk to people and answer this question. I mean, what qualifications do you have to be? You know, do you have to be qualified to do this? You're listening to American Expert Radio Search. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Our guest is Roger Mundy. Stay with us.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, You can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Suffer from gingivitis, sore and sensitive gums, bad breath, canker sores? Use Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash for healthy mouth and gums. Order now. Call toll-free 1-888-558-8482. That's 1-888-558-8482. Vitamir uses no fluoride, no saccharin, and no aspartame. Vitamir mouthwash and toothpaste are 100% natural products that fight gums and periodontal disease with zinc and folic acid to assist your body's immune system, and uses the ancient powers of clove and myrrh to purify and soothe, aids in healing mouth sores from braces, heals bleeding gums, a natural teeth whitening that works, and eliminates bad breath with regular use. Order online at www.vitamir.com. That's www.vitamir.com or call toll-free 1-888-558-8482. That's 888-558-8482.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and following the instructions there to support us, or call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the broadcast part of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, and our guest is Roger Mundy. He's founder of an organization, I guess he's the founder of the organization, Kansas 10th Amendment Society, and even though the organization, the people have began to do their own thing, he's continued to stay active and educate people, and tonight he's educating us on state sovereignty, a very important topic, very important because as the federal government gets more and more out of control, there becomes less and less options for us freedom lovers who actually want to make a difference. And tonight he's talking about how we can make a difference. Roger, before the break, I posed a question to you, and I know qualifications, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that we have to be qualified to talk to our state representative, and yet I know with a lot of people, feelings of inadequacy, you know, are there, you know, maybe I'll look ignorant, I'll sound ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit to these people who might feel inadequate, I guess is what I'm trying to say, when they address legislators, because these are positions of authority, and many of them, I guess, are lawyers or former lawyers.
Right.
You know, so when you're talking to somebody who seems to really know, you know, who am I to educate a legislator?
Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is the American government, and I can show how the British government, the Dutch government, so forth, the republics in the world, were started by people in their assemblies. And the question is, who's the master and who's the servant? The legislators call themselves public servants. And if we are to be self-governing, we must take command and we cannot take command unless we give command. Now, that may be a bit frightening, but the option is more frightening. The other, only other option, because if you don't have your will represented, somebody will.
That's right. I remember
you.
Jackie Petru says all the time. She says somebody is going to govern.
That's right.
And it might as well be us.
And you know, I do know about the UCC, and I know about the 14th Amendment, and I know about the America's worst criminal, Abraham Lincoln, and so forth. I know about these things, but the fact of the matter is, that doesn't even matter if the people take it upon themselves to assert their authority. They are an irresistible force. No matter what legal construction or lawyer, who, by the way, is an officer of the court and actually has no business in the other division, one of the other divisions of government called the legislative body, which is a correction once we obtain our power, we must put through that you're a sworn officer of the court. You must take a new oath and supersede that, or you are not qualified, or maybe just not let them in the legislature because they don't belong in it. We have a division of power. They are meant to be in the court. If they're an officer of the court, they have no business legislating. So these sort of things, these simple principles, people can understand and get it in their heads that if they don't give commands, somebody else will. And
right.
What
would you say to somebody who says, Roger, I just don't have the time, you know? I mean,
right.
Work full-time, raise children, those of us who home educate, you know, know what a responsibility that is.
Right.
You know, and that's certainly a viable, I don't want to say excuse, a viable reason. Maybe
yeah.
It is an excuse for a lot of people.
Right.
How would you address that issue?
Well, the problem here, that's all power is local. If you want your children to be free, and if you want not to end up even more enslaved, you have no choice but to perform your civic duty. This is where the great 501c3 churches have failed.
Amen.
They need to teach the people they have a civic responsibility. And people can do this, but it starts by simply coming together with your friends and neighbors. You may have to give up football or TV or just some TV but you need to gather with your friends and neighbors and discuss these things and discuss how can you do it. And pray about it, for the Lord will provide a way. I know everybody who was involved in the 10th Amendment had the same kind of problems, but we managed. And small in number, what is interesting, our influence was far greater than our numbers should have said it was, because like I said, we went up there, and there's nobody up there but legislators and lobbyists and hired mouthpieces. But you go up there and you say, I am a constituent. And remember that you are whom these people are meant to be serving. And that your opinion is more important than all the rest. As a matter of fact, if the people could gain enough power to do so, they should throw all the lobbyists out. It is their house.
That's right.
And nobody else's. As another matter of fact, all legislation should be created locally. No more canned legislation from think tanks. No more foreigners in your state house. Think of it as your own house. And people trampling through and trampling on you, you must stop it. And there's only one way, and that is to get together with your friends and neighbors and assert your power. So it is a difficult thing, but you know what? There's strength in numbers, and people can come together, and we had donations. We had no dues. We had donations. People give a dollar, you know, and some of us would be selected to go up. And there are papers that were discussed, what's going to be presented and not, what issue and so forth. And so we made our way up there in that way. And we carpooled. And, you know, a lot of us were very poor. And yet we still stopped Kansas from voting for a standing fast-track con-con. And I remember one time I went on the radio just to inform the people in Kansas about a certain bill that would have federalized all of, or would have defined federal law enforcement as state law enforcement. So the federal law enforcement could come right over the state border and be legally recognized as state law enforcement and not even slow down, utterly destroying the jurisdictional boundary that was put there on purpose. And I went on the air and talked about this one part of one bill, and I was so delighted to find out later that the switchboard in the state capitol was jammed. The people called in by the thousands and thousands and thousands, and after that thing had passed both houses and was on the governor's desk and he wanted to sign it, he vetoed it.
Fantastic.
And called on the carpet the reviser of statute that put that little nasty thing in there. And all of that came about because of that.
What is your opinion of the governors, by the way? I've just kind of had the contention that over the years, just based upon what I'm seeing, what I see them implement, and I don't know if it's done out of ignorance, but it seems to me like most of the governors of the states are all controlled, bought and paid for. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think it's true. We had an elderly guy who used to come to our meetings, and he talked. He ran in 1967. I don't know, it's 76 for state treasurer or something, and he had somebody from the voting machine company offered to give him the election for $10,000. So we have scammed votes. We have a fraudulent vote. But what's remarkable is, even with a controlled vote, even if those who would enslave you can control who gets to go in there, the joint voice of the people themselves are too powerful for them. Instruction is more powerful than the ballot. And because if you have a man with high moral character whom won't be bought and sold and put into positions of high authority because he can't be controlled, you don't have to worry too much. But
yeah,
the ones
so
they put in
few,
there,
so
if they don't have that high moral character, they don't have a backbone. They're in it for their own gain, and they don't want to risk the wrath of an entire constituency against them. And, you know, there are people that do amazing things that are not, don't usually make the even the local media here. There's a county that I found out about only because of my work with the 10th Amendment Society, and we had contact with different groups around the state. There's a county where the people recalled the entire county commission. All of them. Fired all of them. And that power is there. what it takes is people need to do it, and I know they don't have the time, they don't have the money. You pray God to provide the time and the money, and He will do it in conjunction with you and your neighbors and your friends, and where two or three are gathered, there I am.
There you go.
And I've seen it happen. So that's the great power, and it's greater than any other power. When the people know they have this power, then liberty will reign. Because the enforcement against the people comes from the people. The most important thing the enemy has is the conditioning of our beliefs and our minds. If we free those and we pray for truth and we find truth and we have the courage of our convictions and faith, we will prevail. Because there's only three powers in any society, and the most powerful one is the belief of the people. And way down below that somewhere is the power of the purse. But the people, if they're united in their beliefs, are far more powerful than the purse could ever be. So if the people united in liberty and understanding and exercising this power, the people with the purse strings will use it to buy tickets out of the state. Because it's so powerful. And then way below that's the power of the gun. You know, they say the pen is mightier than the sword. It's incomplete. It's the pen, meaning belief. Because it's talking about writing and how you reach people's minds, right? It's the pen, the purse, then the sword. And the sword's way down there. Because if the people are united in their belief, who's going to enforce it against them? And, you know, it's also the fact that, okay, you bring in foreign troops. But in a free country, foreign troops defect. As most people are in the military from all countries around the world, not for ideological reasons, not because they're a diehard communist, but because it's the only job they can find. And everybody in the world wants the same thing. On the lower level, they want hearth and home. So we have that commonality.
Hey, Roger?
Yes.
Yeah, you faded on me just a little bit. If you could speak up there a little bit.
Sure. Well, I wish this... Yeah, you know, there's a problem with the volume.
Yeah, I just want to make sure you're heard. And, you know, the problem of federal money coming to the States...
Yeah.
Has been an issue for some time, and that's how they're getting this stuff passed, as we mentioned before.
Yeah.
Now, the idea has been suggested, and I believe it's in the 10th Amendment Sovereignty Resolution, that the states could simply quit sending the money to the federal government in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if the states don't send the money, it can't come back with strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
It is possible. There was a bill, I remember seeing it. What they do is they collect the money that's earmarked for the feds, and they put it in escrow. And if the state feds cross the line, they don't get their money. Okay, so it doesn't go up there. And so there's many things that can be done on that front. And another thing that could be done is there are things that could be used instead of Federal Reserve notes. And anybody that has an opportunity should read Storage and Stability by Benjamin Graham, who put forward an idea. He was so renowned as an economist. He wrote Strategic Investment. He was the most renowned economist in American history, possibly. The only outsider invited to go to the Bretton Woods, and he presented this plan. Of course, they rejected it. But it's something that could be done basically, it's kind of complicated, but basically what it is storage of commodities, like wheat. And what you do is you store the wheat, and you receive a commodity script or a warehouse receipt that is worth he made a multiple fronted commodity script. And the purpose of that was, like we saw in the history of money, where the singular commodities, or there were two, gold and silver, and how we know the history of how they came to get rid of that, and it was because they could corner the market. And the great banksters of the world cornered the market on the gold, and they bought the congressmen to outlaw the silver. Well, there are many commodities of intrinsic value, and states could issue warehouse receipts, and if we hit a disaster or if they needed food, well, there would be stored food if it was wheat, for example. And the warehouse receipts are redeemable. And so instead of a promissory note or thin air, you've got that. And I think that a system like that could even be started privately. People could get together and do that. Farmers could come to understand that economics and do that themselves. And there are systems of coupons and systems such as that circulate like money that are not Federal Reserve notes. Ithaca, New York there's a group using time dollars. The issue, and it's, I don't know how widespread it could be, just another example, but you get a dollars for an hour's labor, a time dollar. Locally, they use it in exchange. And their local economy prospered with that. So, there are many ways to look at, answers to the federal dollar, and what one great way to get away from it is to lessen your dependence upon it. And right. I think if people came to understand Benjamin Graham's system, for example, they could see how this system that has intrinsic value could, of its own merit, merely push the Federal Reserve system out of existence because people would prefer it.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Hey, you want to take a call, Roger?
Okay, sure.
We have Max from Rhode Island, I believe, on the line. Max, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. You got a question for Roger?
Yes. Remember back in like 2000 when Bush said that we're going to make hydroelectric cars so we won't have to depend on the Middle East for our oil needs?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to that? Because I've been wondering, and I really am doubting Bush. I really don't like him anymore.
Well, I think they've got something. They're talking about some kind of, I'm no expert in this, but they've got some kind of super new battery thing they can do. But I got to tell you, the technology, the internal combustion engine and the technology and the oil-driven cars are so antiquated it's laughable. I think we're at least 100 years behind where the technology was long ago.
Yeah.
Because, for example, Tesla built these towers, and what it did is it broke down the resistance in the air called the dielectric resistance between the air and the ionosphere, and the ionosphere is charged by the solar capacitor, which pumps out 10 times the amount of electrical energy as it does heat and light. And so the Earth is charged by this, and the discharge happens through lightning and so forth. Well, Tesla had a way to punch a hole. It sends an electrical pulse up through the atmosphere and what it does, it creates like a wire, it creates a conduit. And ionospheric electrical energy comes flowing back down, and it is virtually limitless, and all things could be run on it actually for nothing.
I've never really seen any breakthroughs in the news with this happening. And both my parents are both Bush supporters, and I'm not really much of a Bush supporter because I can tell he's the only president with a DRI drug use and all that. Mm-hmm. Dropped out of high school.
Well, the truth of the matter is, presidents are just good order takers.
I know that he's taken, like, I'm an activist.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Bush is, I have a book I'm reading about it. It's called, the Anti-Bush, like, I Hate Bush Reader. I forgot who it's by, but it's a good book. And how he executed Rudy Roy Jones, who's mentally retarded, back in, Texas.
Yeah.
And, like, they had him tested, and when they had him hold a gun, he pointed it to himself. So, and they executed it anyway for some, something that someone else did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think now for a very long time we haven't had a good president for a very long time. I don't know the last good one. There were some good ones. You know.
Yeah, we had. Who was a good one? I think Nixon was all right. He got us out of Vietnam, didn't he?
Well, Nixon tried to set up the 12 federal regions.
And he did also go to Soviet Union and China, too, which no president had ever done.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
you know, if you look into the into his history, the 12 federal regions were meant to supplant the states. And so I don't think we have had any, perhaps we haven't elected a president in generations.
Mm-hmm.
They've been selected and put upon us. This next election coming up here, we've got two men that are both members of the Skull and Bones Club at Yale, where in order to join it, you have to strip naked and lie in a coffin and take certain oaths.
Can you refresh me on the Skull and Crossbones Club?
Yeah, Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones. What was that again? I forgot.
That Skull and Bones Club at Yale is an insider's club. It was founded by, I think it was Captain Kidd and the Jolly Roger, you know, on the pirate ship. A smuggler's club.
Oh, so it's just like a kind
of... Bush family, the fortune came from smuggling opium into China.
Uh-huh.
Hey, hold on again. Caller and Roger. Roger, you want to stay over for the second hour?
I'd love to. Can you get your guy to work on the volume? I barely hear you.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Folks, you're listening to American Exposé. We'll be back in a few, just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. All right.
Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon, and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell...